Welcome back to That You May Grow, a podcast brought to you by the Mount Vernon Church of Christ in Mount Vernon, Texas. This week's episode is a continuation of the discussion on preaching, teaching, and evangelism that we began last week with Brother Kevin Rhodes from the Brown Trail School of Preaching and Brother Chris Grota from the North Jefferson Church of Christ in Mount Pleasant, Texas. As we begin the episode, we will go ahead and rewind it just a little bit so that we can have an idea of the context of where we were in our discussion.
When we were going through Brown Trail, through the School of Preaching, Heath would send us out every Sunday. You get a text midweek, hey, I need you here, I need you there, I need you here, right?
I feel so bad for those congregations because those lessons we were putting out were not much of a lesson.
Well, you know, the deal that it was the first time it ever hit me was when we were doing that, when it would be, you know, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. I told my wife one day, I said, I never really thought about this, but I feel as if I'm missing out on my own being edified, right? You know, we have our study time that goes into those lessons, but having that opportunity to just sit back on a Sunday and listen to a lesson versus preaching every single lesson, it has great benefit.
I have a different perspective on that.
What's it?
With now being at the school for 5.5 years, I have been in some Bible classes. And the frustrating part for me is there's absolutely no way I'm getting out of that Bible class what I could get out of it if I were studying it on my own. And it doesn't matter who's teaching it. Is that for me, I'm just going to be able to do more with it. And I guess it shows how old I am. How long I've been doing this, and the other thing is that no Bible class is aimed at me. You know, that's part of the problem of it. So after a while, you get up here and say, okay, they've got whoever's teaching that class, that's got to be for everybody else here, and that I'm just kind of an outlier, and the things are going to be of greater interest to me about that text. The person teaching that class is not as likely to see. They don't have the same kind of background or interest or approach to the text. So it becomes a little bit of a frustration. So I have to be willing to both listen to the study and do my own study simultaneously to make that class be something for me. And I wonder how much that's actually true for people. If they knew how to do it, it would actually capture them more on the text.
Well, I just know every time I listen to somebody else's lesson, it's like I'm learning. I'm sitting there listening and learning for something that's going to help me teach that better the next time I teach that.
Yeah, there's something you can gain.
I'm learning. I'm taking notes because I'm going to use it.
There's always something you can gain. It's about approach. Yeah. Sometimes it's about, you know, an illustration someone used, and you say, I've always tried to say, there's going to be something there.
We got a lot of brethren that take notes in the Bible classes and lessons, and I think if you're going to go to the problem, if you're going to the trouble to write down everything that's being said, then you ought to have an opportunity to get up and teach that someplace else, you know, because you need to use that. If you're never going to use it again, if it's just there to help you keep you stay awake through the lesson, that's not good enough. You need to have the motive of, I'm going to take it and teach this somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to know it better. You know, I love learning that. And that's, to me, is part of the joy, no matter where I am in the study, where you're preaching it, you're teaching it, or you're having a conversation with somebody.
And this gives me an idea for a sermon right now.
Is just having the joy about something that just fascinates you about the text and about what God has done, and to let it hit you in that way. I mean, me personally, over the years, I've just gotten to where I just see something, and it's not just, this is some kind of little, you know, fancy scholastic theology. It's about, look what God did here. It is a fascination, not just with the meaning, but at thinking about God, and that those moments to me are important, and I want to find ways to share them with others, which is what Chris is talking about. And I don't know, I get into it. It's harder in some ways when you're going around, and that's why I don't have the practice at sitting the same. I've got a lot of practice over the last few years of sitting through sermons. And, you know, it's interesting to watch somebody else teach and their approach. And you have to accept going in that person's not you and they don't need to be you. That's one of the first things you have to do. And so you go and say, well, but then it's okay to say, well, how would I do that? Because now I can grow from it. Now I can take something someone else offered and I can do something with it. It's still going to – I can learn from it. Somebody else can learn from it because I sat through this. And I think that camaraderie, you know, matters. I get to, you know, Eddie preaches the congregation. John O'Dell is the associate. I get to sit with both of them. I'm friends with both of them. And it's interesting that they're both their styles, very different from my style. And to then I've gotten to preach more recently, filling in at a congregation, but both preach and teach. And so which has been good. I felt like I was getting rusty. You know, if you're only sitting all the time, you don't think, oh, am I going to forget how to do this? You think I've been doing it for years, but you get worried after a while. And so the regularity of what y'all are all talking about. And I also think about things like that with preaching that I wish we could find a way to do with what Chris said. I wish there were a way, a good way, a practical way to bring elders that maybe are not the most proactive elders right now. Y'all have talked about some of the things your elders have done and how that's made things easier and set things up. I'm trying to find a way to reach out to men who maybe would love to find more to getting going in the congregation, but their only answer is to have the preacher do it. And I would like to find a way to take those men and to train them in such a way and to expose them to things, different methods, so that they could understand the role they have and how important it can be and that they are capable of doing more than that. And I think that when you go back to what congregations could be, if we would be committed to the local work as a real mission kind of approach where we're all in and we put two men to make sure we're getting that congregation growing spiritually and we're getting the community where they know the congregation and the congregation is serving and known for the truth and we're reaching out to people and that this is, again, going back to the problem, it is the congregation's work, not the preacher's work that's doing that. And that requires elders to see that. Well, if you combine a team of preachers, committed elders, building, growing a workforce as a congregation, that to me is a winning formula. But what's it going to take for us to get people to even see that? Because it's such a shift from what most people have seen in their lives. You have to get elders to make a financial commitment to have two people, right? Sometimes the money comes before the idea hits. When do we get to where we say the need exists? Let's find a way that this will pay off for the Lord, that kind of thing. I mean, I realize that we got a lot of, you know, small congregations right now, and that's part of the problem is that they're so small, the preachers have to do everything. They don't have enough leadership to get beyond that, and it seems like it's just going to be – there's no way to get beyond because he's not going to be able to save that congregation from themselves. They're going to have to, at some point, get busy and be willing to do more. And I'm trying to figure out if there's something maybe that you've seen – Chris, you've been in multiple places and we've seen the difference between congregations and how they operate. Some of it is just where you happen to live.
you know, where people are moving. And sometimes it's about there's some good industry in the area that holds people there. So I've been in places that are – it's clearly the whole area. I mean, it's not just the church. It's the whole area is just going down. But there are still souls there.
Yeah.
So how do we kind of help those guys?
Well, and I don't know how you get a leadership to do anything different than what they've ever done. I don't know what the answer to that is. If they're going to be in charge, they're going to be in charge. But one thing that they don't have any control over is, as a gospel preacher, you can be doing 2 Timothy 2:2 with every willing member of the church. You can go through and systematically pick out people who are apt to teach and sit down with them and work with them and develop them. And you can create a core within a congregation that will carry the evangelism, and in time the culture will change. Yeah. But again, that's one of those things that it will take time to do.
Yeah.
But I just totally recommend whatever. If I had to go back and do, if I could just take all my thinking and wisdom now and put it back in me for the first congregation I ever worked with, then I would go back to that congregation and I would focus on evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I left there and I went to my second congregation, which was De Leon, what I did there was I focused on evangelism without even realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that I was focusing on evangelism. It was something that a few opportunities made himself available, and we took it, and that's just kind of it kind of happened without a whole lot of forethought and planning.
Yeah.
It sort of happened accidentally.
I think sometimes that happens. The community, mm-hmm. as it exists, the culture in the community, the size of the community, the makeup of the community, actually dictates what approach we have to take. Mm-hmm. And like you talk about the difference, you know, where you and I share that first place we worked, not at the same time. You're talking about a place of 20,000 people, and people hardly knew that the church existed. It was a smaller congregation, and and the culture was so different there. Whereas a small town, people are used to doing things together, knowing everybody. It does lend itself more to a natural evangelism kind of approach. And I don't know that we do enough to kind of approach and think about in these different situations. I'm right now in the, I think, fourth, and it's working to become third, I think, largest metropolitan area in the country, right? What happens in a metropolitan area? You guys have been there. It's a different way of living, isn't it? You know, you're around all these people, and thankfully we're not like New York, where if you talk to somebody, they're likely to hit you. You know, but you're around more people, and there seems to be less interaction. Mm. There's just because trust isn't there, and if people aren't even interacting because trust isn't there. And trust is key, as we talked before, about getting a Bible study and building relationships. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then what we've got to figure out is, I think that is different in a small town. There tends to be an easier barrier to trust because you are known.
Yeah, we were a big fish in a smaller pond.
Right. And so how are we going to – and this is important to me in trying to train people and prepare. One of the things we've added since you guys were there, we've actually added a class on congregational evangelism, specifically to go out ready to train and make evangelism the first priority as you come out, and to show you how to do that. Because that's one of those things that you can, no matter what how divided the congregation is, no matter what problems they've got, you can actually – you should be able to start with evangelism if everyone's a Christian, because it's so core to who you are. So you can start there, and it can become a means to solving other problems. But to do that, you still have to know what that community is like. If you're working in De Leon, Texas, you're working at Mount Vernon, Texas, or Mount Pleasant. I was in Cleveland for several years, where that was a
community that was at that time 30,000, and they're likely in the next 10 years to become 60,000. It was actually the leadership of the town, who I did know, you know, they're still even at that size. I was friends with the mayor, and it was, they were trying to find desperately a way to hold on to their identity and not be, and not be overtaken by the Metroplex, to have an individual identity. And I thought, you know, that has some real application in terms of what the problems you face as a congregation there. Is, are you just a place without a, and you're this building within a larger mass, and you don't have a community tie in that same way? You have to work harder at building community ties. The larger the place gets, the larger the city around you gets, building the community ties becomes harder. You have to be more focused, more deliberate. You have to try to figure out what that is, because those people, you know,
they're transient too.
Yes, they go everywhere. And, you know, you go, you know, I'm going to go shopping. You know, I'm liable to drive 10, 15 extra minutes to go to HEB, right? So, you know, if I'm going to do that, I have no trouble walking right past you to go to some church that'll tell me exactly what I want. And we have that happen within the church, and trying to find somebody who doesn't, have never heard of the church, it's even harder. So we do, trying to find a way to have a name and to build some kind of recognition of who you are, an identity. And I don't mean an identity of the church. That has to start with Scripture. I'm talking about projecting the identity of a group of people who love God and love the people around them. It becomes a real creative process. And I think that's something with, as we're becoming more urbanized, state of Texas, right? That's a place filled with cowboys. Everybody knows this, right? 70% urban. Latest figure, 70% urban. You've got Houston, you've got San Antonio, you've got Austin, you've got Dallas, you've got Fort. We've got more cities over 100,000 than any place. We've got multiple cities over. I'm in Fort Worth, Texas. It's closing in on 1 million. So we've got this problem in. Where's the tie? No, you don't think. Why? What do I have to do at Fort Worth? I work in Bedford. On my way in, I drive from Fort Worth. I go through Haltom City. I go through Watauga. I go through North Richland Hills. And I may take a little brief detour into Hearst. And then I'm in Bedford. Most people would never know that in making the drive. What's the difference between those? Well, there are differences. But what's the difference in the church in reaching them? And I think we're going to have to be more deliberate about solving some of those problems if we're going to really be successful.
Well, I was thinking about that the other day when I was over at Colleyville. I thought, Brown Trail's right over there, Colleyville's over here, and there's another one down the road. It's, you know, it's a relatively close distance, but yet two different towns.
Yeah.
And with two different scopes of influence. But how do... And that the churches are made up of people from other places that
right.
come there. How do they accomplish that sense of community, getting into the community and working with the community and the church becoming known?
Right. I think that, honestly, I think that you actually have to be committed to being your own thing. And goes back to what you were saying earlier. I still maintain it's maintaining in the mind of the members that they're willing to identify first as a Christian and a member of this congregation, and they take that with them wherever they go. Because I don't think that's actually what happens most places.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of the things I know you mentioned earlier on in the podcast was the fact that in our preaching as preachers, whenever we're teaching and in all that we do in helping the congregation better understand God's Word, part of what we're trying to do is to communicate that we have something wonderful, that we have a gift from God, that we have the gospel, which is truly the good news. And so we're looking to share that in a way that it encourages people to want that as well for themselves. And whenever we can help the congregation understand that, that's what they'll go and share with the community. And it just takes the time and patience of understanding, you know, hearing the two of you speak of your own experiences and everything, that it's something that doesn't happen overnight.
No.
And it takes – you got to have the long-term goal in mind.
I think that what we're talking about with congregations, I think it's generational change. And I don't mean that we just wait on – this is not talking about waiting on people to die. I'm talking about it just takes that long to develop people to change the overall culture of a congregation. I think it takes a decade to change a congregation that's inward looking to be more outward looking. Mm-hmm. I think it takes a long time. You have to commit to that, and you have to have a plan and just kind of a steady drumbeat, both from the pulpit and in your own life, of bringing things up in meetings, in asking the question, what are we doing to reach out to this community? How does this community know us? What can we do to make the community more aware of who we are, what we stand for, and that we care about them? Those kind of questions. Yeah. And it just, you know, hey, some people need to be scared to see it coming because they know that question is going to happen. And that's okay.
And they will be.
Yeah.
You'll make them sick of you too.
But if say, would you stop asking that question? I said, would you start doing something so I don't have to ask? It's not that hard. It's that this is something God wants done. And what I'm convinced is the problem is there is a subtle thing that is never taught. So it's not something that is just taught. It's something that is practiced. And that is we have become a worship center that's not really a workforce. And that's what's got to change in the people's minds. Okay, I don't think that it's a preacher problem, except where we can play into it because we become, you know, the old joke was that the preacher is busy doing the elders' work because the elders are busy doing the deacons' work, the deacons are busy doing the members' work, and the members aren't doing much of anything. Is, well, you have to change that. And partly it is, that's not my job. I will do anything, but I'm busy doing this. Yeah. This is what you need to do, and I know you're busy with that. Let's train people to take that off your hands. You shouldn't have to be doing it.
Well, and that personality trait that says if I've got to get it done right, I've got to do it myself.
Yeah.
Has to go.
Yep.
Because and some people just can't stand not to just go ahead and do it. That's second nature to them, just to go ahead and get it done. But if you depend upon the brethren to do it, then you're going to wait. It's not going to happen today. You're going to have to
wait.
And sometimes it may not get done. You're going to have to wait on it.
One of the hard things, less early on preaching, I had to convince my wife not to do some things. I would tell. She said, "Well, it needs to be done." I said, "Yes, and they need to do it."
Yeah.
And if we're always signing up for everything,
that they won't do it.
They won't do it because they are willing to accept the idea that we're paid.
Yeah, that's what
to
we're paying
be
you for.
The church worker, that we pay you to do that, and that's why I've always been insistent. No, that is not what I'm paid to do. I am supported to preach the gospel and to try to get you into heaven. Please stop making it so hard for me.
We've been very blessed here at Mount Vernon. I guess we've always had a great number who are always ready, you know, just
to
jump in and work and serve. So it's, you know, a blessing we get to share
here.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, we try our best to delegate, right,
mm-hmm.
to pass off some of that work. And one of the things I've already learned, you know, working with Preston is he's very good at doing that and helping people to step into those positions. So I've learned a little bit about that through him, you know, in my first year here. So that's definitely a benefit. Mm. You know, as we're now pushing over an hour, we're going to have to start winding down, though it's a great conversation. I do want to ask one question. Well, we actually have a couple before we get ready to wrap up. But one, if you had one piece of advice to give to someone who was thinking about coming into the ministry or taking that kind of work on, what would your advice to them be?
Do you want to? If you want to, jump in, because if you you know, you could what if everything to death, and if you knew everything you were going to experience, you might talk yourself out of it. So don't question it. Just jump in and get busy.
Go for it.
Yeah.
I think that the people need to know they're going to need to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And yes, there's not going to be some perfect time. You the sooner you get yourself ready, the better. Mm-hmm. But you need to go into it understanding that it's work, that it's a different type of work, and that you have to make God and His Word the center of that work, and then move out from that to the interaction of what you're doing. I think sometimes the problem is people who are interested in preaching, they see preaching at the edges. They see the, if you will, the spotlight of preaching. They see the glamour of preaching, which always gives me a good chuckle. They see someone who has so knowledgeable and everyone looks up to within this realm, within the congregation, as being knowledgeable and has that. And there's that part of it. I want people to know going in that it's work, and that it is, you have to have a servant's heart first before God and then before His people. That doesn't mean that you are submitting to them in terms of your job is not to do whatever they want. Your job is to be doing what they need, and that's actually harder. And that the preparation within His Word and the commitment of heart to God in it means you're going to have to work on yourself harder than anybody else.
Don't be a person that can be bought.
No. You have to have the integrity has to be a core part of who you are, of why you want to do this. And that's why I say put God at the center. Mm-hmm. If a congregation is at the center, then there's compromise is right on the edge. If it is you're chasing, well, I can get a better, I can be paid better. That's not a good reason, because I can give you all sorts of places that'll pay better, but they come with cost. Mm-hmm. You come to this. So what do you need most of all? You need the right heart. You need a heart for spiritual development that is personal, ready to serve. Because then, whatever direction you end up going with it, with a heart of integrity, committed to God, committed to studying His Word, you can fulfill a number of roles working out from that in serving in the Lord's kingdom. If you try to start by thinking you're trying to be, want to be the face, wanting to be, you know, sometimes I look at preachers and I think that they failed somehow at comedy in their life, and they decided preaching was the next step down from that. And so that they look at it on the outside, and the key is to get in and realize you've got to be God's man. And that is going to can manifest itself in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different places. All the other things that can happen, that's fine. But all that other will fall apart if you don't have a core of integrity and a heart for God. It'll fall apart on you. Your world will come crashing down around you. I've seen it too many times. You can't hide from your own internal compromises. You've got to develop you. And that goes back to 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 27 of Paul's, if the Apostle Paul can make a commitment in saying of how he had to discipline his body daily lest he himself should be disqualified. Yeah. If that's what I'm talking about, is it the commitment to becoming the best Christian I can be in heart and in service, it simply manifests itself because I want to use that in preaching. When we try to work our preaching backwards to Christianity, that's going to end up in a bad place.
Well, and what I said before about jumping in, I don't think you ought to jump in blind. I don't think you need to be ignorant about what decisions you're going to make. If you want to make a decision for the Lord, you need to stick to it. And part of that is just realizing that if you're going to get up there and you're going to proclaim the truth in love, you're going to take, you're going to be another voice for God, and Satan's going to come at you.
Yeah.
And as long as you're okay with that, do it, you know, but don't, you know, if you are passionate about serving God in that greater capacity, I mean, why sit there and wait? Just get started because it's a...
That's a good point because, what I guess, you say, what kind of advice to give? Expect adversity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're going in,
you're
thinking
going into
that,
a fight.
Yeah, if you're going in thinking that this is just going to be kind of all nice and easy, Satan will look, and if he can't get to you, he will go after your family. Yeah. If he can't go after your family, he'll go after the church. If he can't get to the church, he will go after everything around. He goes after the world. He's coming after you. He's going to make your life difficult. He's going to, you're trying to reach people. He's going to make their lives difficult.
That's biblical, though.
Yes.
I mean, you look back thinking about the prophets. All the adversity that they faced as they taught the truth, and they tried to show the people what it is they needed to be doing, the importance of repentance and getting right with God, and all along the way, nobody seemed to care. Look in the New Testament, you look at what happens to Jesus, you look at what happens to his apostles, you look at what happens to countless others. You go through the book of Acts and everything else, and it's just a reality that comes with preaching the truth.
Isn't it fascinating that in the book of Acts— people remember the big conversions, and that they actually exaggerate the number of conversions after a while. But they see the church, right? And they forget being dragged in front of the court. They forget being beaten. They forget being stoned. They forget being in prison. That, for them, I think they forget that part that played a role in Peter and Paul's life. I mean, you know, maybe the first thing they need to do is read the book of Jeremiah. because that's what it can. But I don't want to discourage people from it. I think it's a great life. It's a great life when interpreted through this the prism of serving God and having integrity and what it means. But if you're looking at it from a worldly lens, it's going to be rough sometimes, and you have to decide how you're going to look at the adversity. And if you're going to complain, I mean, I look at her today, for example, and I see people generationally just seeming having some problems that with adversity and somehow thinking that that's abnormal. Like you pointed out, that's exactly life. That's the history of it. But some people get the idea that bad things only happen to other people, or they used to, or everything's. I don't know if it's. I think maybe technology has to do with this. They were all used to the latest, greatest, and everything's always improving. They've kind of been sold a bill of goods. Just the nature of society. But I see a lot of the younger people. They have trouble seeing that adversity actually is normal. That's your. We're actually living in an era, in terms of freedom. Economic prowess and ability to spread the gospel without any kind of difficulty at their peak.
Yeah, we have everything easy.
And yes.
They get all the easy answers, but preaching and ministry is not easy.
That's right. And so we tend to think that because of this, everything, but you're dealing with human beings. You're dealing, more specifically, you're dealing with the will of someone. And the only way you're really going to appreciate what that is how hard you have to work on your own will submitting to God's will. And so you can identify with the problem and have those discussions about what this really is about. The problem people have, and that's why repentance is actually usually the bigger issue getting people, is they don't want to give up them to take on Christ. They want Christ, but they still want to hang on to them. And that's usually the problem. And we have to be willing to say, you know, if I'm the best version of Kevin Rhodes I can be, you know who I fall short of? I fall short for being what Christ needs me to be.
I need self and all of thee.
Yeah, there needs to be more Christ. And that's going to far surpass what the best version of Kevin Rhodes would be.
Let me ask the two of y'all another question now. What is y'all's favorite book of the Bible? I know preachers love the question. You can always take the easy way out and just, what are you teaching right now?
That often is the answer. I don't know if that I had a favorite book before I started directing Brown Trail. I think I would say, though, now, and I don't think this will surprise you, I think that now, today, it's the book of Hebrews.
I was going to guess that one.
Because it's because of what I've seen it do in my students' lives. And when I teach the book of Hebrews, that's one of those things, just about every student to come through has said, because I'll ask, you know, I go through and ask questions, I consistently get, whatever you do, you've got to teach Hebrews. And I do love teaching it, but one of the reasons is I love the book, I love the structure, the argumentation of it. I love the depth of it. I love the hidden details of it. I love the hermeneutics required and implied within it and the exegesis skills. But I love the difference that I see in students as they see that book unfold, how that book has such a benefit of understanding God's plan and just kind of having a big picture put forth. And there are just some great moments studying through that book. And they're not always the same for every student, but I still think I probably get more of those moments in that book than anything else I teach. And that includes, I teach Romans, I teach Revelation. I teach it 1st, 2nd, 3rd John as part of his Greek exegesis. And so the skills are different. God has a different kind of thing. But his book of a Bible, I think, from my experience, that makes the most difference. And I don't know all the reasons why, but that's probably why it's my favorite.
What about you, Chris?
Well, I think right now in life, 1 Corinthians is a big deal to me, because there's no way that they could have had, that any one congregation of the church can have so many doctrinal and behavioral problems unless they're out doing evangelism. You go out and you do evangelism, you're going to invite issues. And that's what it was. It's a bunch of babes in Christ, a bunch of little, babies in Christ, and they brought all their little issues with them. And if you tried to enumerate, you can't do it. I've tried to enumerate all the different problems of Corinth, doctrinal, tried to identify all the doctrinal issues, put a name on it. It's hard to do. I don't know if you've done it or not.
I'm teaching 1 Corinthians right now.
If you can figure out every one of their doctrinal issues and every one of their and it's hard to tell, because what you might be teaching about a problem to avoid, and they might not actually be suffering with it. But if they're addressing it, you might assume too that there's a problem within the congregation and it needs to be addressed. So there are problems that you know that they have, and there's possible problems that they might have, and there's all the different doctrinal stuff that they're dealing with, and it's just a bunch of stuff. But you get over to 1 Corinthians 6, and you got all those homosexuals and all those adulterers, and such were some of you. Now look at look at who they were reaching with their evangelism. Are we in our evangelism ready to target the LGBTQ community? Are we trying to reach out to those folks? Will we be able to say to North Jefferson 10 years from now, and such were some of you, but you were washed, but you were sanctified, but you were justified in the name of... And so when I think about church problems, and I listen to other people, other preachers talk about what's going on in their congregations, and I sit there and I think, I like my problems at North Jefferson. I'm very satisfied with our problems. Hmm. Because we are so much better off than Corinth. And it sounds like we're a lot better off than a lot of other places. It's contemporary with us today. But yeah, 1 Corinthians has got to be the one.
Well, final question then. Favorite person of the Bible, minus Jesus?
Well, hey, the integrity of Joseph is just, I mean, that guy was, you know, I don't think he meant to be daddy's favorite. His brothers sold him into slavery. He's got those. He's got a God-given gift of dreams. What are you supposed to do with all that? You know, and so he gets sold into slavery. He goes to work for Potiphar's household. He resists Mrs. Potiphar. He goes to prison. He winds up on Egypt's sex offender list. If it had been me, I mean, I'm sitting here trying to imagine false accusation here. And I've tried to imagine what would I could I be like Paul and Silas singing and praying in a jail cell? Could I do that if that ever came to that? And this guy, he passes with flying colors. And on top of all that, he realizes he's able to forgive and realizes God's providence in all of it. And he says, this is a God thing. So let's move forward. We've got things to do. Yeah, I like Joseph a lot, and I want to think that I could be him in that kind of adversity.
Oh, all right. Can I cheat and pick two?
Go for it.
All right, I'm going to make a connection between them. I think more now, and this is why it's more difficult. But with my current role, I identify a lot more with Moses. I think about when I was young, trying to do a lot of things. I'm very, very active, get frustrated, trying to do things my own way a little bit, and not understanding when you're younger why people might not want to be willing to follow you and listen to you. And go through isolation. But never really change who you are and be working. No, you need to be working on you. I think about Moses when he comes back and how different he is from lessons learned. His commitment to, you can tell, mentoring Joshua different times. I want, in leading others, to have the patience and the meekness of Moses. To always make it about the work and not about me, to recognize that people come to me with problems and they're not perfect and that's okay, and that I may not be able to take whatever I'm doing in my work, I might not be able to get people to the destination, but if I can fulfill my role so that the next person can, I'm good with that.
You also get to deal with a bunch of students who like to complain and murmur.
I do. That's right. I do. That's very much, especially about my tests.
Yep.
Keep some snakes earlier, on hand.
You know, he said earlier about sitting through, listening to lessons. I was surprised he didn't say suffering through some of those, you know, when he comes to school. But
there is a difference. Well, you mentioned that. There is a difference in listening to someone who's learning and is there to learn. Say if I would travel someplace, there are times where I've been maybe to a workshop or something. I thought, and listen to someone say, you really ought to know better than do that. And so it's a little bit different. In the New Testament, I think, and I've changed on this, I think John. And here's the reason that connects the two. John starts off as an eager disciple and a son of thunder who was, I think we can say, maybe a little bit ambitious. And when you end, but he was close to Jesus. And when you end, he's known as the apostle of love. And I would like to be, because I think that definitely in my youth, someone might have accused me of being a son of thunder at times. I sure would love to end up being a preacher of love.
Well, we do appreciate both of you and are thankful for the time that y'all shared with us.
We enjoyed it.
And the insight the advice. Both of you have many years in ministry, and Preston and I are both much younger in our preaching role. So, you know, we appreciate y'all and everything that you're doing, and appreciate the opportunity to learn from the both of you. And hopefully we can take many of these things and apply them even to our work here and try to, you know, serve to the best of our ability. But we appreciate you guys being here.
We had talked about, actually, depending on timing, breaking it up and doing one with you, Chris, and then one with you, Kevin. And I think, actually, with the timing that we did with all of us, that we can probably go in there and find a way to cut it in two and make it a two-part episode even.
We could. That's very possible. Well, we have definitely walked at least a mile, maybe 2 or 3 miles in these 10 and a halfs. We can kick those off now. But we, again, are thankful, you know, for the opportunity for y'all to swing by to join us on this podcast. And now it's lunchtime. I don't know about y'all. My stomach's been growling for a while. I've been having to kind of like squeeze down.
I'm always in the mood.
Always in the mood to eat. Well, I am too. We appreciate y'all that are listening. We have an email that'll be there with the information of the podcast. If you have any questions, concerns, or any input or anything that you would like to add, please feel free to reach out to us on that email. We appreciate you for listening to each of these podcasts and pray that you continue to grow closer to God each and every day. This is That You May Grow.